SF Signal episode 220. Now, I want to give you a warning up front that we're going to be talking about the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special. So if you haven't seen that yet, there is one word that will describe this podcast.
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoiler.
Spoilers.
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 Yep, that was the word. Enjoy. This is the SF Signal Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester. I am an author, a blogger, and a podcaster, and a Hugo Award winner. So, woo! Yay for me! And I wanted to talk about Doctor Who and the 50th anniversary, but apparently no one else did. Because I sent out the email, and only two guys replied. And then I kind of tried to get some other people, and then nobody replied. And then I tried to cancel it, and Fred, like, has shit fit. So,
well, there goes our clean rating.
Well, Okay. So anyway, it's Doctor Who's 50th anniversary, and I thought it was worthy of a podcast. But unfortunately, I think Thanksgiving won out over the podcast. And people are just like, no, I'm traveling, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. Some people actually shouted that they were already starting to cook and to leave them alone and get out of the kitchen before they cut me. That kind of stuff. So anyway, I got two guys to come on. I got Fred. Hi, Fred.
Hi there, it's Fred Kish. I blog at Bernal Alpha. I'm on Twitter as at Fred Kish, and I have stepped away from the turkey for now.
Why are you blogging at
Bernal, B-E-R-N-A-L, Alpha.
Yeah, that didn't help. Why are you blogging there and not at Gravity Lens?
Because
that's my website.
Yeah.
Well, I know, but why don't you blog at Jeff's website? He needs the traffic.
I've never been a real definite generator of traffic at my own website, so I'm not sure if it would help him.
Actually, that was all a joke. What happened to the Lensman's Children?
There's a lot of dead links and other issues, and rather than going through and changing everything...
You just threw it out and said, I'm going to start over.
No, it's still there. It's just coming down a little bit at a time as I check links. And the new website will be a less specific title, so I can be more general when I talk.
You're going to copy me, aren't you?
I'm not intending on writing a book about conversations with my cat, no.
Well, that makes sense, Fred. Having an old website. But I think you're going to copy me. I think you're going to be all things from my brain. You're saying a non-specific, so that you could do more stuff. That's ATFMB.
Well, seeing that I started blogging in, what, 2003?
Yeah, a few years after I did. Okay.
Wow. Seeing that I started blogging before I knew you.
I had a blog that was actually on, what was it? So I've got The New Universe now. Before that, I just had newuniverse.com.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And then I let that go, and I never got it back. So I switched it to The New Universe. So I've believe me, forever. Anyway, so, okay, well, now you got the other site, and you said, is that going to be the site, or are you going to have even a different one after that?
No, that's going to be the site.
Okay.
Plus my usual activity on Twitter, and today I even started a Tumblr. Oh, my God, I am just socially media, whatever, you know.
Well, it only took you almost 4 years to get a Skype account, so I didn't have to call your cell phone.
Yeah, that's true. But how long did it take? How long did it take me to get a high speed internet connection?
So what's the name of the website?
Bernal, B-E-R-N-A-L, Alpha, A-L-P-H-A.
Okay, and the Tumblr is that? Did
that's
you
just
like,
just Fred Kish and Bernal Alpha again?
You had a perfect opportunity to steal
all things from
Gravity
your brain.
Lens. No, Gravity Lens or whatever it's called.
I'm sure Jeff's already got a Tumblr.
I doubt it.
No, I don't.
And that's Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
You know, I have. It's been about 15 years since I actually had a big Thanksgiving dinner with my family, and listening to you two tonight, I now realize why. So. Hi, Jeff Patterson. I blog at Gravity Lens, which can be found at baddaystudio.com. I am at JeffPatterson11 on Twitter, and I am hard at work on this year's Bad Day Studio holiday card, all of which can be found in a compilation ebook called Solstice Chronicles, available for Kindle on Amazon.
Your ears should have been burning last Saturday because someone showed me a holiday Christmassy kind of thing that they had published, and I said, do you know Jeff Patterson, because he does the Solstice Chronicles every year? And they're like, no, well, I know Jeff, but I don't know that. And I said, well, you need to go check it out.
I refuse to believe that someone actually knows me.
He said that he knew you, so that's interesting. Now, as far as actually going to Thanksgiving dinner with family, you see, my family locally sucks because they will travel thousands of miles to visit family in another part of the country, but they won't cross I-25 to come visit me.
It's well, there's reasons sad. For that, Patrick. So
it's very, very sad. But, yeah, you know, what I like to do is I like to go to a Thanksgiving dinner and drop bombs. Yeah, it's like walk in and everybody's kind of sitting there and you just sat down at the table and you throw something out like, you know what? We need Tim Tebow.
Okay.
Not why we're here. We're here to talk about Doctor Who, which actually brought the world together and broke a Guinness World Record for most people watching a drama at the same time.
Crazy.
It is crazy. And, you know, I actually got to see it on the day of on BBC America, which our friend Veronica Belmont was the lead in, which I thought was really cool. If you don't know Veronica, she's with the Sword and Laser podcast, and we've had her on either here. I think we've had her on here, and we've had her on Functional Nerds, maybe. I don't know. I get my brain gets a little wibbly-wobbly. But I know that she's been on something that we've done. It's either here or there. And I thought that was pretty cool. And then they did the special. And then I also got to see it on Monday night in a theater. Now, I don't know why the theaters here in Colorado didn't have them on Saturday night. My guess is that they didn't want to give up the screens to Hunger Games 2.
I don't think anybody had it Saturday night.
Yeah.
Because I heard a lot of people. Oh, really? Because most people I know saw it Monday night.
Yeah, but I know that they... In D.C., they did it Saturday afternoon, the same time it aired.
Ah, okay.
I don't know if there was any showings that night, though. But I know they showed. I know it was in 3D in the D.C. area on Saturday.
Ah. Hmm. Interesting. I know that outside this country, they did have it on Saturday. I don't know. It's just a thing. I believe it or not, I'm absolutely certain that it had something to do with Hunger Games 2. Because they didn't want to give up the theaters. That's my belief. Anyway. I saw it on Saturday. I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought that it brought hope back to the Doctor, who has been kind of lacking. And I thought it was an interesting twist. I don't know how spoilery we should be. How spoilery should we be?
We're past spoiler deadline on this one.
You think so? Yeah. Okay. So,
given how the internet caught fire as soon as it started airing, yeah. Record up a spoiler tag at the head, and we're good.
Yeah, spoilers from this point on, sweetie. So, I should have done a crossover with the Verity podcast. That would have been cool. I thought that it was clever, and of course, Stephen Moffat likes to be clever. I think that it's clever that for 50 years, the Doctor's been running away from home, and now he's going to try and run back home.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, Fred, let's start with you. What were your impressions of the 50th anniversary episode?
Well, I actually, to step back a bit, I managed to avoid all the hype. I managed to avoid all the spoilage ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff I actually watched a couple things around it that I thought were almost as good as the 50th anniversary. There were two small mini-sobes or webisodes or whatever the hell they call it, that the cool kids call them these days.
Yep.
Especially the Night of the Doctor,
mm-hmm.
which was, of course, had everybody melting down on the internet saying, oh, why can't we have Paul McGann back?
Yes, yes, yes.
And then there was a shorter one also called The Last Day, which wasn't as good.
But I did not care for The Last Day at all.
Yeah, it was Definitely the night of the Doctor was the better of the two.
It felt like Halo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like a Halo thing for some reason. It was like, oh, look, Gallifreyans are actually like just normal people, and that kind of bugged me. They're not Time Lords. They're soldiers. And
it was mostly just to have the prelude that would have taken the first 5 minutes of the actual episode.
Right.
You know, where the Daleks break through. Let's just, you know, for anybody who cares, go see this. But the thing that we liked the most, I think more than the actual episode, more than the actual 50th anniversary episode, was the documentary movie, An Adventure in Space and Time.
Yes. That was awesome.
I mean, they managed to, like, mix in little bits where they showed you how the music was made and, you know, the conflict over the set design and, you know, all that, as well as the main story. So they gave you a lot of background and history without being overwhelming with, you know, a 5-hour HBO special with, many deaths.
I enjoyed that. Now that was Groundskeeper Willie from the Harry Potter movies, was the guy who was playing Hartnell. And yeah. I really liked him. I thought he did an excellent job.
It was actually creepy how much he channeled Hartnell.
Yes.
The other thing that I really enjoyed about that, aside from little hat tips to the sexism and racism of the time without really beating you over the head with it, was something that occurred to me when BBC was running their, you know, Doctors Revisited specials.
Mm-hmm.
They did the one, it's the Dalek story that takes place right around the same time as Unearthly Child. And there's a gimmick in it where the girl, I forget the companion's name, where she's in the boarding house and she's about to go outside, and as she's leaving, the BBC logo comes up and they're talking about it. And now the premiere of a brand new science fiction show. And it's obviously supposed to be a little bit of fan service to the premiere of Doctor Who.
And
I totally
missed it.
I remembered seeing that, and I remembered saying, oh, that's a clever little bit of, you know, quote unquote fan service before fan service was actually a thing. But what I totally forgot about the whole thing with the Kennedy assassination. And the fact how much that had impacted it, to the point where, and also the mention that was made about the fact that the show, the day it premiered, it actually ended up running 1 minute late or 1 minute later because the show before it ran long.
Right.
All of that was one of those things where it all just sort of started clicking in my head as it went. But yeah, Adventures in Space and Time was that. I was really very surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
I really liked it. I liked how the actor portrayed Hartnell. I didn't feel like they pulled any punches.
Nope.
They made sure you understood that when it started, he was a dick.
Yeah.
And that he kind of continued to be, you know, even though he warmed up to the idea of being Doctor Who, and he ended up, you know, loving playing with the children and having the children love him and that kind of stuff. It was very interesting. And I really enjoyed it. I did watch that. What was it, Friday night?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, Fred, you mentioned the two minisodes. What about Ryan Hendrick's Doctor Who Besieged, which was the fourth prequel minisode?
I haven't seen that yet.
So that's the guy who does his own version of Doctor Who that was good enough to scare the BBC. I don't know if you've seen it. It's kind of like Star Trek. What's it called?
The various reboot or reimaginings and extension series.
Yes.
Star Trek Intrepid, and then there's the fourth and fifth year of the 5-year mission one. And mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
So that was kind of funny. Someone linked that to me, and I watched that. His companion figures out his birthday, his actual birthday, and takes him somewhere for his birthday. And hilarity ensues from that point on. Because, mm-hmm. of course, it can never be something simple with the Doctor. So, yeah, we had the movie on Friday. Now, what did you think of that movie, Fred?
Adventures in Space and Time?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, I said I enjoyed it almost as much or even more than the actual 50th anniversary episode.
Well, Jeff and I were talking about it as you were coughing. And I was just curious if you...
I heard you.
I just was curious if you had anything else you wanted to throw out there.
No, I mean, it was, you know, unfortunately hit me in a very moving fashion because I saw as he deteriorated mentally. It reminded me of what has happened way too much to my own family. And the scene in at the end where Matt Smith appears in the control room with
yes,
him.
Yes, that was that, awesome.
That was almost as moving as the scene in the 50th anniversary where Tom Baker shows up.
Yes.
You know, very in a very similar way, you know, reaching across the various doctors. You know, even more so than in the 50th anniversary where everybody shows up on the screens.
Yes.
I mean, as great as that was, as much fun as that was, especially when Capaldi shows up, you know, that having Tom Baker and him do a one-on-one was very moving.
Yes, it was.
I mean, you know, Queen Elizabeth was fun. There were a lot. There was not a dull moment with the three of them, especially William Hurt. He was hilarious. You know, what's with this timey-wimey? You know, and what was the other one? Can't you talk without moving your hands?
Yes.
Apparently not.
So you brought up a bunch of different things that have my brain going. When they showed, or they had the character. Let me start over. In Adventures in Space and Time, they right. showed Hartnell deteriorating.
Right.
It reminded me of the Three Doctors, which was the first anniversary episode, if I'm not mistaken. Yep.
Yes.
And in the Three Doctors, we had Troughton, Pertwee, and Hartnell. But Hartnell was ill by that time.
Very ill, yes.
And he was not able to do a whole heck of a lot. So they actually had him sitting in this little triangle box thingy. And they would just kind of bring him out, and he would offer some sort of insight to the other two, and then they'd kind of pull him back again.
Right.
But there was a lot of interplay with those three, because he was sort of the crotchety old doctor, and then you had Troughton and Pertwee, who, even though they were older men, were younger than Hartnell. I felt like Moffat channeled a little bit of that for this special. Because you had three doctors, you had an older doctor and two younger doctors. And it was almost like the three doctors that we could have had if Hartnell had been in better health.
I agree with you, but more than that, I think he purposely channeled with some lines of dialogue the Five Doctors special.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to talk about that too, yeah.
Okay, yeah, but he definitely he played and did hat tips to each of those as it went on. But I agree with the fun bit with the original three doctors is the fact that they are as crotchety and irritable at each other, but as soon as anything external drops into the scene, they are of a like mind and working flawlessly together, which yes. is which definitely occurred in this.
And when you talk about the five doctors, now obviously that was the one where Baker didn't want to do it because he didn't like the script. So you had a different actor playing the first doctor, Hartnell's doctor.
Yeah.
Then you had Troughton, you had Pertwee, and you had Davison. And they kind of fudged it as far as Tom Baker was concerned because he didn't want to come back. He had just left. And he didn't like the script, and he didn't feel like he was getting enough to do. And so they used an old clip of he and Romana 2, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, from Shada.
Yeah, on a gondola. And, right. you know, he gets trapped in time kind of thing. So it was really the four doctors, but they called it the five doctors.
Oh, well, that just reminds me, because the other thing that was a hilarious bit was the five-ish doctors reboot. Did you see that?
Yes. And I know exactly where you're going. Go ahead. Go ahead.
There's that same scene on the gondola is in there.
It is. They used the exact same clip. It was hilarious. And then after, so since we're talking about anniversary, so then there was an EastEnders Doctor Who crossover that was sort of an anniversary thing for Children in Need. Did you guys ever see that?
I heard about it, but I did not see it.
It is available on YouTube, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
It's also on one of my DVDs. Not sure which one, but I remember seeing it on a DVD as well. But yeah, it's the strange little crossover thing that they did for that. So, okay. We have the three doctors here. I thought it was clever. I thought they used time travel once again, which is kind of like Moffat's favorite trope. They used the time travel in a way to kind of move the story along and play some tricks and do some different, you know, interesting things. I was really glad, super glad, so happy. I mean, incredibly ecstatic that there were no angels under those sheets in the under gallery.
Yeah. Well, or the silence or.
Yes. I was so worried that it was going to end up being an angel or that's why the dust was there or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The older doctor, I loved. I loved John Hurt. I thought he was just wonderful. And as far as everybody else, I thought what they did with Billie Piper was incredibly clever. And she didn't have to be Rose Tyler. She got to be the Bad Wolf.
Well, she, oddly enough, I mean, she's matured as an actress. And I liked her so much better than when she was just Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just never really got on to her with warming up to her as being a companion. It just
and I think she ranks just below Sarah Jane, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, you know,
most people just love her.
I always liked, pardon me, I always liked Rose as a companion, but the two times that they brought her back, I really didn't care for her. I didn't really buy her character's motivation. I loved her as the interface in this. She was actually creepy, mm-hmm, in a very friendly way, which I liked. But the one thing I do want to mention, you mentioned John Hurt's performance, which he was the consummate professional and he did things really well. But something that did kind of bother me, and you've mentioned twice now about Moffat being clever, and I agree, and one of the things he's really good at is throwing things at you so fast that you don't really have time to question a few things. And something that kind of bothered me was the fact that we see the War Doctor sitting there talking to the interface, realizing what it is he's about to do, and he's just so tortured and he's so torn by it. And as soon as he meets the two younger doctors, he becomes much more lighthearted
and animated.
His criticisms about them are lighthearted, and he really doesn't get back to being bummed out until the interface reappears, both right in the jail cell and in the Black Archive. And it kind of, you know, I said to myself, okay, I understand that Moffat really wants to play with the three of them almost on equal footing, but at the same time, we really didn't get to see him go from being this, you know, person with a great burden on their shoulders to realizing he's interacting with these two wacky other versions of himself that he now has to kind of get used to.
I almost felt, Jeff, as if meeting those two and seeing them interact and the men that they were kind of reminded him who the Doctor was.
Oh, I agree. But at the same time, I actually went back and watched that scene where he appears in the forest, and I was like, he was really at his nadir, you know, mm-hmm, 30 seconds ago. He was really realizing how bad the situation was and what it was he was going to have to live with. And the fact that the interface has already told him your punishment is that you're going to get to live, and then suddenly, boom, he's in the woods, and oh, hello. There and he's suddenly this avuncular man, and it was like there should have been a little bit of a buffer there should just a tiny bit.
Well, that's been a problem with the new Who all along, is that
I agree,
you know, I agree that the old Who, there were way too many scenes of walking and whatever to pad, yeah, out an episode so you could run it year round. But in the new Who, they often, you know, they wrap things up that, well, you know, maybe two episodes would have been good. Please, two episodes?
Well,
at least we got 90 minutes here.
Something else that Moffat does is that he's very good at putting, you know, at making the leap between scenes via sleight of hand.
Yeah.
You know, in this special, and don't get me wrong, I very much enjoyed this special. But, you know, we don't see the actual wrap-up of the human Zygon storyline. Right. We go from 13 TARDISes basically effectively pulling off a disappearing act to suddenly everybody having tea in the gallery. You know, that was a bit of a, you know, the rug pulled out from under you. But as soon as we're there, he throws enough, you know, weighty dialogue at you that you forget what's going on. I sound like I'm criticizing it. I'm not. But Moffat does have a tendency to do very contrived scene structure. And this special did throw a hell of a lot of fan service out. But given those two criticisms, it was still wonderful. This was fan service done correctly without beating you over the head with it. The fact that there's obvious continuity issues in the story itself was actually part of the story. He understood how to put that together. And he did a very nice job with it. And something has to be mentioned here, too. That was possibly David Tennant's best Doctor performance, in my opinion.
I have some stuff to say about that, and I'll say it in a second.
Okay.
But before I do, I agree. I think Moffat likes to be clever, and he likes to show us that he's clever.
Yes.
And I've said that all along. He does that quite a bit. So before we go any deeper, Fred mentioned the five-ish doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Fred, why don't you tell folks what that was?
Well, it's basically the three doctors, living doctors, who were not in the 50th anniversary reunion special, other than little insets. Peter Davison, Sylvester McCoy, and Colin Baker.
Now, before you go on, am I the only one? Did Sylvester McCoy was not in the trailer either? His doctor was the only doctor I did not see in the trailer.
People listening to this,
go look at that trailer and tell me if you can find Sylvester McCoy in there, because I do not see him in there. Anyway, go ahead, Fred.
But they're all waiting to hear whether they're going to be in the 50th anniversary special.
They're not waiting. They're calling.
Yeah, well, that's funny. They're calling. They're begging. They're sending. I mean, they're on Twitter. They're plotting with each other. And also, McGann is in this as well.
I was going to say, and it's not just the doctor. So you've got Davison, McCoy,
right,
and Colin Baker, who was the sixth
Colin
doctor.
Baker, right.
For some people, arguably the most hated doctor of the whole lot.
I think there's other reasons. You know, there's a backstory as to why he's quote unquote the hated doctor. But
you also had David Tennant.
Yes, David
you
Tennant.
You had Georgia, his wife, who's Davison's daughter.
Right.
You had Stephen Moffat.
Peter Davison's kids.
Yep. Troughton's kid.
John Barrowman. His wife and kids.
Mm-hmm.
there was a Pertwee in there.
Yes, I believe there was.
And
a Troughton.
Right.
And Tom Baker's voice.
Right. And his image from Shada.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a way they were poking fun at the whole hype around the anniversary and who is and who is not going to be in it.
And this explains the pictures that were on the internet of the three of them with picket signs in front of the BBC studios.
Yeah, right.
Because it was all part of this.
It was a very nice gesture by the BBC to not only thank these guys or involve them, but also poke fun at fandom and hype and media and all sorts of other things.
And Russell T. Davies also makes an appearance.
Yeah, that's
hilarious.
Right. That was hilarious.
So yes, you need to go look at that. It's the Five-ish Doctors reboot.
Right, and I sent you a link, so we'll hopefully have that show notes.
Yeah, that's funny.
But it was so well. Credit. It was really well done. I was surprised. They spent a pretty good amount of money on it to put it all together and involve all those people that they involved.
Written and directed by Peter Davison.
Well written.
Yeah, written and directed by Peter Davison.
Yep.
By the way, I forgot to ask you guys in the beginning, are the two of you allowed to be on a podcast together without John Stevens?
Well, we did try to get him because we are contractually obligated when two of us are in one place, the third must be involved as well.
Mm-hmm. Found that funny. So let's go back to the anniversary special. So I saw it at home on the TV, and then I also saw it at the movie theater. Completely different experience in the theater, and I'll explain that in a second. I keep saying that, I know. So the episode had a lot of great stuff. The Brigadier's daughter. Loved that. Loved that her scientist.
Granddaughter.
Yes. Loved that her scientist person was wearing Tom Baker's scarf. That was kind of cool. What else? So let's talk about Baker for a second, because so our bagel overlord, John DiNardo, was a little bit confused by that whole scene. And to be honest with you, the man's had a lot of bagels, and as you know, the THC in bagels really does a number on your brain cells, and so I'm not surprised that he was so horribly confused. Doctor Who has established, and Fred can correct me or complain, that a Time Lord can actually choose the face that they regenerate to.
Well, that's kind of hinted in
hinted. It's not even hinted. The first episode of with Romana 2.
Right.
That's she where regenerates and she picks the face of the princess from the Key to Time.
But she also regenerates a couple times in an episode, and you have to wonder, does she use up a new life each time?
Well, it would probably be the whole thing where it's, you know, within 24 hours of the regeneration and they can grow their hand back kind of crap.
Yeah, right.
But the thing is, they've established you can pick your face. So for them to play back and forth with the Tom Baker stuff, and that, you know, he could at some point choose that face, regenerate, and then become the curator.
When he retires, yes.
When he retires, yes.
Yes, we're also, no? We're also leaving out the fact that the entire universe was rebooted from the very beginning, what, 3 years ago? So.
Uh-huh, yep. Yes, it was.
So a lot of rules from the original series might still be in flux.
I mean, I'm looking at Doctor Who continuity about as being as about as legitimate as you guys use with your comic book continuity at this point.
No, Crisis on Infinitive Gallifrey. Yes.
Right. Well, hey, that might be the next crossover. Who knows?
Yeah.
I can see it now. The Doctor standing there holding Romana in his arms as she's dying. To save all the universes. Or was that Supergirl?
No, you'll have one doctor holding another doctor. Tom Baker will be holding David Tennant.
No, Tennant will be over talking to Leela, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, go ahead.
Well, no, when you mentioned the Brigadier's daughter, really, really hoping that we're going to be seeing more of her, because this was, what, her second appearance, the second story she's been in?
Yes.
Well, again, I think it comes down to Moffat being, he likes the classic stuff better, and I feel like all along, since he took over, he's been trying to undo what Davies did, and he's been trying to take it back.
I wouldn't go that far, but he definitely, I mean, we've now seen all the regenerations. I mean, he definitely went out of his way to fill in the gaps that we had not seen coming into this, and he's also I don't want to say he's taking it back, but I think he wants to kind of bring it to some closure.
He brought back Bad Wolf, he brought back Rose. Yeah. I mean, you can't really say he's trying to take it all back when he keeps bringing it in,
I'll almost go so far as to say he went out of his way unnecessarily to really reinforce the fact that, yes, this is a full-blown arc, and this is all the same man. You know, even while he was showing that they were having differences of opinion and stuff like that, he was really trying to hammer in, hi, there's a continuity here that people have to be aware of. You know,
interesting.
Even with the Tom Baker bit at the end, I mean, he was clearly looking at Matt Smith and saying, you know, he actually comes right out and says, you could be me or I could be you, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I saw it at the theater, number one, I screwed up. I thought I had bought tickets for 3D because it didn't say, you know, it said Doctor Who in 3D. Buy your tickets here. I clicked it. I bought my tickets. Well, apparently there was a 3D and a regular D, and I got the regular D. So I did not see it in 3D. Number two, I saw it on a Monday night, and the theater was freaking packed. And they had multiple theaters because they had the 3D theater and they had the regular theater, and they were doing multiple showings of it too. And there was a line. It was crazy. And it made me go, wow, this... I said a few years ago that this was like the most accessible sci-fi show out there, and that it was bringing a lot of fans in, and I feel like that was really illustrated with this 50th anniversary because it was standing room only in that theater. And people were cheering. They were gasping when certain things happened, and I mean, it was just, it was a whole different experience than watching it at home, I got to tell you. First off, it started with... You know, like in the movie theaters where they say, you know, turn off your cell phones and don't do this and that. They had a custom one that was a Suntaran.
Really?
Yes. And it was the guy, the Suntaran guy. And he had his
Strax, yeah.
And he had his birth clutch with him. Clutch. And they were all there and ready. And he's talking about all the etiquette in the theater, and he's taking you and showing you people that have been arrested by the Suntarans and tied up because they broke rules, like attempting to communicate with outside forces from within the theater and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then he says something along the lines of, finally, you know, I there is one human custom that I wholeheartedly agree with. And he grabs this big bucket of popcorn and he's like, I love that you take popcorn kernels and you heat them until they explode. Because popcorn kernels really do feel pain. And then you eat them, and he puts it in his mouth, and you hear the popcorn kernel going, ah, as he's eating it. It was hilarious.
Wow.
And then he finds out, he's like, so, you know, sit back and enjoy this Suntaran war film. And someone says, no, it's about the Doctor. He's like, who would want to see a movie about him? And he gets all upset because now it's about the Doctor. So they did that whole thing. That was like a little bit. Then we had a
shock that I hadn't heard about that ahead of time.
Yeah. And then there was the whole episode. And after that, they did a special on the making of. And that was pretty cool because it was narrated by Colin Baker, and I recognized his voice. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, when they did the big reveal and they were talking about, you know, doing the episode and this and that and all the fun that they had and how hard it is to keep everything secret because wherever they go, people just show up. They realize it's Doctor Who and they show up. And they did this whole big thing, and then at the end, they started cutting to all the people saying happy birthday, happy anniversary. Tennant, Smith, Tom Baker, Jenna Coleman, Stephen Moffat, they're all saying this stuff. And then the narrator says, well, I guess there's nothing left except, and then they cut to him, and you see that it's Colin Baker. And he's like, happy anniversary, Doctor Who. My name is Colin Baker. And a huge cheer went up for him in the theater. And I thought that was really neat. So completely different experience because you're with, you know, tons of people who love Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. So I was really blown away by that. And then tons of cosplay. There were so many people dressed up as so many different doctors. It was awesome.
I may have said this on one of the Horseman episodes that we did, but if you went back and told myself from the late 70s that this was going to be the following that Who had in the 21st century, or the fact that when I went to the mall a couple of weeks ago and there were three different stores that had standalone displays of Doctor Who goods, books and action figures and you know, dongles and stuff like that. Myself from the 70s wouldn't have believed it. You know, the fact that it's managed to muster such following, and not by really doing anything new either. I mean, it's it's, you know, I'm not taking away from the strength of the show, but something that needs to be emphasized here, and something that I bring up to a lot of the younger fans that I've known, is the fact that it's the only show that I can think of, and I could be wrong here, where the plot of every episode that it has given to us so far centers around a science fictional idea. You know, as much as I liked, you know, Galactica and Firefly and stuff like that, and Farscape, there are episodes of those shows that are basically stories that take place in a science fiction setting that don't have a science fictional idea at their core. But every episode of Doctor Who, when the Doctor gets around to explaining what actually is going on, it's always a science fictional idea. And the fact that they adhere to that as rigidly as they do is something that really needs to be commended, because you see a lot of young fans who are following this show, and this is their, you know, if this is their gateway into SF in the broadest definition of the word, I'm all for it.
Absolutely.
I also have to mention that one of my coworkers has two children who are 10 and 8, who became Who fans in the past year and watched all the episodes, the Davies and the Moffat episodes, and a few of the older Doctor episodes. And her oldest one, her daughter, really enjoyed it. The youngest one, the son, was kind of meh about this episode, I think just because there wasn't enough monsters running around.
Well, I know Fred's daughter has gotten into it.
Oh, yeah. She even had a friend over.
Nice. I know the Bagel Overlord also has offspring who's really enjoying Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. They watched that. They watched Adventures in Space and Time. They watched a couple of the episodes about, you know, the specials about the various Doctors. I know they watched the McGann episode. They watched the Tennant and Smith episodes. And they may have watched the Pertwee episode. So it was quite the night of Who.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
One thing I do want to say is that I want to say a week prior, I rewatched the McGann movie, which I had not watched since it first aired. And I was actually working at Fox when it aired the original time. And I remember how critical I was of it when it aired. But watching it now for the first time, after having had whatever this is, 7-8 years of new Doctor Who episodes, I was kind of surprised that I did not, I was not as critical of it as I was when it first aired. I mean, I think it aged relatively well, and I think everybody did a really good job, and you can tell that everybody involved really put their heart into it. Does it stand up to a lot of later classic episodes? Not necessarily, but I can see why they elected to keep it as canon. There's certainly enough of the Doctor charm in it to fit into continuity.
Right. I don't think they had a choice, given that Sylvester McCoy was in it.
Yeah, but they could have.
I don't know. And that doesn't hold as much of a warm spot in Whovian fan hearts as the Peter Cushing movies do. And I don't care for those at all.
That is where I got my start, though, believe it or not, Patrick. Yeah.
I hate to say it, but so did I. Those got shown on local TV before the Tom Baker episodes were on.
One of the local New York stations had the 4:30 movie, and every year, a couple times a year, they had Science Fiction Week, and at least one time a year, they showed both those movies.
Hmm.
So in 1968 or so, that's when I first encountered Doctor Who. And then another New York station in this around 1977 started showing all the Tom Baker episodes every Saturday. Each story back to back until, you know, the whole story that day.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because one of the things that was odd for me when I first started watching Doctor Who was that the first time I saw it, and I don't even remember what episode it was, but it was a Tom Baker episode, and I really didn't like it. And I think I may have come into the middle of it, but it really wasn't my speed. And then I had read somewhere, it was Harlan Ellison telling the story about Michael Moorcock sitting him down in a hotel room and saying, you have to watch this show. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he spoke about it as passionately as he did, I started watching it again, and I watched one serial from the beginning, and I really liked it. And then one of the PBS stations that I had access to was able to start showing the Pertwee episodes.
Right.
And I did not understand the whole regeneration thing at this point, so I was really confused by this whole thing. But as the Pertwee episodes were coming out, I was really enjoying them. And then I finally picked up a book that explained the way the show worked. And I said, oh, I get it. And so I started watching it with new eyes after that. And after, you know, well, once I understood it, I did not look back. And the Pertwee episodes are still probably my favorites.
Well, I used to watch them on Saturday night on PBS. And they did what you're talking about. They would show the entire serial back to back. So you got the whole episode. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time you talk about when you were in the 70s and you were looking at this and you never thought that it would be what it is today, 50 years later. My friends had no understanding of why I loved this show so much. They could not figure it out. And as far as they were concerned, it was a waste of time. And the VCR helped me out a lot because I was able to record the episodes and still go hang out with my friends and then watch the episodes, you know, on Sunday. But I was hooked immediately. And Doctor Who for me was Tom Baker. That's what I started watching. It was Tom Baker and K-9 and the various Romanas and Leela. And I don't even remember Sarah Jane until, like the Five Doctors. Was that the first time I saw Sarah Jane?
The one thing that Tom Baker did do for me was when they did the Key to Time season, the idea of telling a bigger story through a series of smaller stories and kind of stepping up the magnitude of the scale as it went. Nothing in SFTV up to that point had tried to take such a big bite. You know, we had seen, you know, really big stories, and we had seen, you know, there was obviously the influence, you know, but by that point the biggest thing we had seen was, like, you know, big space battles that they had attempted to do on Galactica and Buck Rogers and stuff like that. But the fact that Key to Time was saying, hi, we're going to do this really epic story through a series of smaller stories, and have it culminate the way it did, because that was when the Guardians were involved and stuff like that, that was possibly the largest scale SFTV that have been done.
Yes.
At least when it comes to the magnitude of the story and what was at stake, etc. So,
well, as soon as it came out on DVD, I bought it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I tried to buy a bunch of the episodes as they were coming out, and then I kind of got behind as you know, money did not become as easily spendable. I got a little bit behind, but... Yeah, the Key to Time was huge for me. Anyway, bringing it back to this, the 50th anniversary, it's kind of funny. It prompted a friend of mine to go back and look on Netflix, and you can actually get the first episode of Hartnell on Netflix. And watching that, the response was, wait a minute, the Doctor had a granddaughter?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it was Susan. So we've come a really long way in 50 years.
Yep.
Oh, and they did, the 50th opened with finding out that Ian still works at the school there.
Yeah, he's on the school board or whatever. Yeah. Right. That was hilarious.
School. Is that actor still alive?
Yes, he is.
Wow, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
They had him on the various episodes where they show the, you know, the Doctor represent retrospectives.
Yeah.
He was in the Hartnell episode.
That's right, he was.
I mean, the scariest thing for me is that I am 1 year younger than Hartnell was when he started Doctor Who. I'm like,
oh, no.
Yeah, I'm just sitting there picturing cranky Fred sitting in his, you know, easy chair with a, you know, cigarette and a scotch.
Yeah.
It's funny, Fred, because when in Adventures of Space and Time, he's watching himself as the military character yelling at the screen. I was like, yep, there's Fred.
So,
oh, and how good was Brian Cox?
Pop, pop, pop.
as oh my God, when he gets up in Hartnell's face and is talking really close to him and stuff like that. Oh, it was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. I kept waiting for him to say that they needed to go to the lake to find Wolverine.
I kept seeing him as the leader of the theater troupe in Deadwood.
Now, what's interesting about the 50th anniversary is DiNardo absolutely hated it. He said it was like the worst thing he'd ever seen.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Well, no, it was kind of funny because he and I were talking about it, but his daughter hadn't seen it yet. So we were talking about it in hushed tones. It was like, yeah, did you watch The Doctor? Yeah, I saw The Doctor, I think. Oh, it was really cool. Yeah, it was really, really cool. We really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was so awesome.
Well, you know what happens. You know, once you win your second Hugo, it just goes to your head. And nothing is good enough anymore. So.
True enough.
So now we're done till Christmas, right? No more Which Doctor Who.
That's possibly the shortest wait we've had for Who chapters in a while. So
yeah, did we get a complete season this year? I don't even remember at this point.
No,
sold me a complete season box. So I hope there's a complete season in it.
Yeah, but it was split in half with Amy after Amy, at least when it aired.
I don't know. I'm so lost at this point.
Yeah.
So we've been going on for a while, guys. Do you have anything else you want to say about the 50th anniversary episode, Brad?
Hope there's 50 more.
Well, there is. Supposedly Eccleston will come back for that one.
Ah, poor Mr. Eccleston.
And now for my next trick.
Yeah.
The only thing that I was slightly disappointed in was the fact that, as Fred mentioned with the prequel webisode, was that the Time War was just kind of a war. That was a little bit of a letdown for me. I expected a bit more... weird. I don't know. Something more, a little more metaphysical.
So along that train of thought, I mentioned it earlier. It kind of, you know, it's like I never thought about anyone on Gallifrey not being a Time Lord.
Yeah.
We've never seen anybody on Gallifrey not be like a Time Lord or Time Lord's like soldier.
Sure you have.
Okay, who?
In classic Who, Tom Baker, when Leela travels with him to Gallifrey, she's put outside, and she meets up with the rebels.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Mm.
Yeah, they are Gallifreyans. They are not Time Lords, or they have rejected being Time Lords. They're definitely not rulers.
But what we saw in the 50th special sort of implies the existence of Gallifreyan masons and plumbers and things like that, unless, of course, they subcontract to other races.
That right. could be, yeah.
The Ood.
The Centaurans. The Centaurans make excellent plumbers. You will flow!
Well, if the other Time Lords are anything like the Doctor, when they need a plumber, they're just going to go to London.
And when they need a dentist, they go to the Old West.
Yes.
All right. So any other thoughts, Jeff?
Nope.
Fred?
Nope. Unless you want to hear about what we're reading.
Okay. I wish people could see the emails that we send back and forth. So, Fred, what are you reading right now?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm reading quite a bit there, Patrick. I received a really big book of Stephen Baxter novels in an omnibus, so I'm starting to reread the Z-Lee stories, starting with his collection called Vacuum Diagrams. I'm still reading the book I mentioned on the latest Three Horsemen episode about Johann Sebastian Bach. Yes, I know it's not science fiction. I'm starting to...
He was a shapeshifter.
Yes, he was. He might have been a Centauran. Who knows? I'm reading... Power Sat by Ben Bova, which is set early in his Grand Tour series. I just finished Quicksilver by Neal Stephenson. That's a reread. Again, more of a historical than a science fiction novel, but I enjoy that series a lot. William Gibson, I read Pattern Recognition for the umpteenth time and started to reread the second book in that trilogy, Spook Country, which is really strange to read those two books, and I'm sure the third one will also be this way, and sit here and look at all the news about NSA and CIA and all the other three-letter agencies, and you're like, huh, we're living in a science fiction universe.
Did you see that they have figured out that they hacked Google and Yahoo and all that stuff, not by actually going through Google or Yahoo's infrastructure, but by actually tapping the fiber between Google and like the internet hub?
No, that's that just came out.
They just figured that out. Yeah. No, they just had an article on, I think on CNET, that they're like, they didn't have to hack anything. All they had to do was plug into the fiber.
Yeah. And then I'm reading some Samuel R. Delaney, Empire Star and Babel 17, which is two of his short works paired together like an old ace double. And hopefully by the end of the year, I'll finish rereading Starboard Wine, which is a collection of his essays, which is just such a dense book that every time I read a single essay, I have to put it down for a month or so. Not me not being a John Stevens type. And that's it for this weekend.
Oh, that's it?
Yep. So what about you, Jeff? What are you reading?
Well, I've got a few things. I just finished the audiobook of Robert Charles Wilson's Burning Paradise, which I enjoyed, but I still have to process a little bit because he threw in some real negative notes that I wasn't expecting, and I still have to walk away from – I still have to figure out what I'm taking away from this book. I have not established my relationship with this book completely yet at this point. I also just read, right before we recorded, the first issue of Black Science, which is the new comic by written by Rick Remender with art by Matteo Sclalera and Dean White. It's done in a very painted style. It actually looks like a lot of old Warren Comics art, which I really enjoyed. It's kind of a weird vibe on sort of a Challenges of the Unknown, early Fantastic Four type stuff, with a lot of real creepy alien landscapes. And it is a story that comes front loaded with a great deal of sense of wonder. And I enjoyed it very much. In fact, I'm probably going to go reread it right now. And I also started rereading from 1989, a collection called Scare Care, and it was a horror anthology that was edited by Graham Masterton, pardon me. And it was a fundraiser for the Scare Care Trust, which was a children's charity. And one of the things that got me thinking about it was the fact that there are so many authors. It came out in 89, and it contains so many authors from the 80s that I had kind of forgotten about, like Giles Gordon and James Kinsner. And it's also got stuff by James Robert Smith and Ramsey Campbell and Bruce Boston and John Burke and Steve Rancic Tem. But there was some people in there that I hadn't thought about in a while. And it's also got a lot of stories by many famous authors, James Herbert, and it's got Avenger of Death by Harlan Ellison in it and stuff like that. And I hadn't read a horror anthology in a while, and rereading this, a lot of these stories I had not read since this book first came out. So it was a nice little revisit.
Good. Cool.
Is that it?
That's it.
What about you, Patrick?
Oh, let's see. I just finished East or West, Volume 1. Which is a comic book, and it should be over at Kirkus by now. And that was very interesting, Four Horsemen, you know, to kind of tie into, I guess you guys have a podcast or something?
Yeah.
We try. I'm about to read The Treachery of Zethus by Stanley Griffin for my critique group. And I think, do I have anything else here for my critique group that I need to read? Now, if he's listening to the podcast, he's going to freak out. He's like, oh, my God, you said my name. I don't see anything else in here. It's got to be something else in here. Usually there's like a ton of stuff I got to read. I don't see anything else that worries me. So I got to do that. Let's see. Is there anything? Oh, I've got the Manhattan Projects Volume 2 over there that I should probably read.
I got to catch up on that.
And let's see. I got a couple other things cooking, but I don't remember them off the top of my head because I wasn't actually planning on asking that question until Fred guilted me in the email. So.
Well, that's because you surprised John last week, so I want to make sure I was prepared.
You want to talk about a surprise? Django Wexler was planning on talking about the wrong topic. He was like going to talk about the topic from the week after. So he talked intelligently about our topic. It was awesome.
Yes, he recovered quite well.
He recovered quite well. Yes,
he did. He is a welcome addition to this madhouse.
He is a consummate professional. I don't care what DiNardo says. All right, so Doctor Who 50th anniversary. It's going to be awesome to see where they go with it for now, and whether or not it'll get canceled in like a week.
Again, yeah.
Yeah, maybe what they'll do is they'll get rid of Moffat. They'll bring in the people who did Primeval, and everything will go downhill.
Oh God!
No, no.
And I'm sorry, I meant Primeval New World. So,
yeah. Either one.
I would like to apologize right now to Connie Willis for insulting Primeval. I meant no offense whatsoever.
I'll back my criticism. The original show went completely downhill before they rebooted it, and then the reboot bit as well.
But the problem is they rebooted it every season during the season.
Yeah, I know.
This isn't working. Let's kill them and bring someone else in.
Oh God. How do you mess that up?
How do we explain that they're dead? We'll bring in a dinosaur. Okay.
Now you've depressed me, man. I was doing fine until you brought up that joke.
I think you should go and brine a turkey or something.
I hate everybody.
So, just to throw it out there, because you guys, we kind of talked about you being Waldorf and the other guy. There is a new Muppet movie coming.
Oh, no. Yeah.
There's already a trailer for it.
No, it's like watching the Abrams Star Trek, man. It's not.
There's lens flare?
No, they just don't count.
I figured it out. I think the lens flare in Star Trek that Abrams was doing, I think that was actually his version of the little forget-me device from Men in Black. So every time there was a lens flare, he thought that the audience would forget the crap that came before it.
No, not going to work.
But hey, at least he's moved on to Star Wars. Nothing bad will happen there.
You're just bringing this whole thing down, aren't you, man? You're just, tis the season to just be bummed.
News update. BBC is only going to have the 5-ish Doctors reboot available for 3 more days.
Oh, okay. Really? Well, then by the time people hear this, they won't even get to know it.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Hopefully it'll be out on DVD. I really hope they put it out somewhere.
They'll have to pirate it like everything else. So.
True, or that.
Hmm. Well, I know that Lou Anders was looking for something that he was trying to find on iTunes and was having a hard time finding one of the minisodes or something. Mm-hmm. So they were having some issues there.
They were having a lot of traffic issues.
Yeah.
Something has to be said for the fact that anytime a big event like this happens, it's one of those things that opens up the eyes of the people that control the infrastructure of the internet and make them realize, oh my God, we're not nearly efficient enough. So, and Doctor Who really broke the back of a lot of servers. So,
yes, it did. Alrighty. Well, thanks guys for being the only ones to reply to the email.
No, okay. My pleasure.
We really appreciate
it. And if you're listening to this, and doing your holiday shopping, there is a podcast with me and Fred that had a bit of a holiday gift idea thing that you can go find on SF Signal.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny that you guys had that episode after I sent out my email talking about how we should do an episode of gift giving.
Yes, you can still do it.
Copycats.
You know,
my upcoming podcast ideas are not things for you guys to figure out what you're going to talk about on the Three Horsemen.
No, it's not. But we knew going into it that we were going to do a better job than
you. Sure,
you,
would, so you did. This is yeah.
We took the high road intellectually. We've got a guy on our podcast, Patrick.
Yeah?
Who's got a dictionary for a brain.
That's awesome. Does John Stevens know him?
Oh, good Lord.
All right. Well, hopefully by the time people hear this, they have already consumed tons of turduckins or turbriscafil, whichever they prefer. Yeah. And or even veggie turkey, you know, whatever floats your boat. Hope you had a great holiday. Thanks, guys, for coming on. And go watch more Doctor Who, right?
Yep.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo?
Angry robot.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
And scene.